Welcome to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Memorial Day weekend already. Wow. May 23rd. Yes, sir. Who's going to win the race today? Anyhow, we're going to pick right up where we were last week and continue on. So here we go.
Well, the music we do started out in Switzerland several years ago when we used 16 tape recorders to record a Pleiadian ship, okay, a spaceship. And we recorded the sound. And in the sound, we observed a timber. And the timber, if you were a musician and wondering what timber means, or you're not a musician, the timber is where a piano plays the middle note C and a violin plays the middle note C. But the fact is, when you, these two instruments are played, they sound apart. They don't sound like they're the same instrument. Okay, that's timber. Now, there are certain types of instruments that produce resonant timbres to the human DNA. Not the notes, but the actual sound of the instrument themselves. Okay? And these instruments were brought here, the original ones, from the Pleiades 28,000 years ago. One of the best natural timber consciousness-raising machines and sound here on Earth today is called a sitar. How many of you know what a sitar is? Okay. How many of you listen to a sitar? How many of you feel your a serious mood elevation raise in the sitar sound? Okay. The application of the sitar is called a raga. And usually a trained master becomes a sitar player, because the sitar is a lot harder to play as a string instrument than, say, a guitar. It's like playing about six guitars at once, actually. It's very, very in-depth. Now, what is sound pollution? Okay, you remember in probably all of your biblical and metaphysical studies, the universe is created from what? Does anybody know? Sound. Right, sound. And what happens is, I don't think when God was creating, turn your hands up, okay, when God was creating a sound, he was listening to a jackhammer around the corner, or an ambulance was going by. I don't think that those kind of sounds were available in those days. As a matter of fact, when the sound of Aum is being heard continuously, people don't have accidents, and so therefore they don't need ambulances. Because accidents are only temporary lapses in consciousness, you know, between two individuals typically, and sometimes an individual in the environment, wherein the person's lack of consciousness became unconscious of the environment that he's in. That creates an accident. So sound pollution in our life extension studies is paramount to a huge amount of aging process. As a matter of fact, you know, high on the list are atmospheric poisoning, you know, pollution from the atmosphere, radiation poisoning, and sound poisoning. They're almost equal in all aspects. That's why in certain types of music, when you listen to it, you get violent. You know, kids get very violent and go out and kill people when they hear certain kinds of music. Other kinds of music become very healing. You go down to these massage tables and you feel the masseuse, and there's some nice sounds going in the background. The massage becomes a lot more therapeutic than it would be without the sound. Even the sound of silence sometimes is not as warm as the sound of a properly tuned instrument. So what we did during the time of tenure with the Pleiadians, we got in touch with the seven different frequencies of sound, and there are sub-frequencies called semitones, and we created sound tapes that we use today with our systems. In my book, Rays of Truth, up there, which is up there, that was one I was showing you, that's available in the bookstore now because we're almost sold out in the booth, I explain the sounds and the timbres, and at our booth you can buy these sounds. Now, what we have done since then is I have probably one of the most advanced recording studios in the world, in my house. You wouldn't want to know how much I spent on that studio, but it had to be there because we create sound for different people, for different situations. When you get into our systems technology, we have entire scalar wave systems, we create individual sounds. We also create CDs and tapes for you to listen to in the forms of rock operas and meditation and easy listening music. So we are doing and have been doing sound at Pyradyne for many, many years. And strangely enough, in the sound work, about half the musicians you could name have participated in somewhere or other in some of my work. It's amazing how instrument And very famous musicians like to get into this stuff. How many of you remember the old Yes Band? Remember them? You know, John Anderson used our sounds for years. And he wrote a song about me on one of his albums called Brother of Mine. How many of you remember the Moody Blues? They used a lot of our sounds. How many of you have heard of a band called U2? They recorded the Shake, Rattle, and Hum album in one of our systems using our sounds. And so just a little bit. How many of you heard Elton John? You know, those are the kinds of people that have gotten involved in our sound work, just so you understand. Just about everybody. And the producer of all of these people in their studios, they also have these types of sound systems, pyramid systems, et cetera, et cetera. So anyhow, everybody feeling this? Yeah. Try to get around and get every. Yeah, go ahead. Well, by the time that the question was, how do I evaluate somebody? By the time we evaluate you for sound, if you're really going to get into some individual stuff, you'll already have one of our working systems, okay? And what we do is we start out component-wise. When you get into the receptor technology, you're muscle tested for the frequency of the hydrogen. And the hydrogen atom has 7 colors and 7 sounds that act as doorways to gate through to your consciousness, to your physical body, consciousness itself. When you enhance the hydrogen atom, you enhance your sound ability, your interpretation. When you enhance the hydrogen atom, you enhance your vision. Just the human growth hormone, HGH alone, will improve the average vision we're finding now of a person. In 1 year, 15 to 16%. So now in 2 years, you're going to have a 30% improvement in vision. This is just a hormone we're putting into our body in a spray form, let alone this other stuff. So now when you start adding the other stuff, it's phenomenal the results you get, because it's like a huge surge of the anti-aging thing all at once. It's not just one thing or another thing. And the way I've worked with some of the greatest anti-aging, you know, doctors on this planet, I work with people all over the world, just about every country, that are at the top of it. And I have found that their programs, each one of them has a great idea. But one great idea and one person that's getting 99% bombardment all day long with a 20% or a 10% great idea, that's not enough to overcome the deluge of negative energy. So you need to integrate all of these programs, okay? And so what we do with our systems technology, we have a device, for example, and I haven't ever brought into the show because it's a big hassle to bring stuff up. If you want to see what I'm talking about, you could write our website down. Okay, it's fredbell.net. Fredbell.net. And that takes you to Paradigm. But it's easy to remember, fredbell.net. That takes you to our website. One of the first things you're going to see there is a device called a star orb. Okay, a star orb looks like a pyramid here and a pyramid there, kind of like a star. It's a little device about that size. It costs under $200. Not very expensive. If you take that little star orb, connect it to your ceiling, and connect a wire to the third wire in your plug, connect a second wire to a ground wire outside your house, or if you're in an apartment, to a water pipe to ground out the ELF, and took the third wire to your refrigerator, okay, what will happen is it will get rid of the ELF in that environment of the house. It'll take it out of the power lines. It'll take it out of the air. And it'll take it out of your refrigerator. The most amazing thing when you take it out of your refrigerator, and just anywhere in the refrigerator, is you put salad in there, it stays 2 weeks. You put food in there, it lasts 3 to 4 times longer than normal. And rarely, after if you have a dirty refrigerator, clean it out first with chlorine or some bleach, and then hook the star orb up to it, because you don't want to introduce any more stuff, keep it clean, it will maintain that sterility forever. And you'll find that you won't see stuff growing on your cheese anymore. It's amazing what happens to a refrigerator with just that one item, okay? And that one item then transmits a pulse all over the immediate area of the room, which heals the body. You might have a clock, a television set. It gets rid of that radiation. That's one simple thing that we've been making for 20 years. Now, how did the star orb come about? It's a real interesting story. When I was working with the National Health Federation in the U.S., I spent 18 years going to every major city starting back in 1974. As some of you remember yesterday, the National Health Federation is the one that got vitamins made legal and health choices made legal in the United States so that the doctors didn't write prescriptions for synthetic vitamins, et cetera, et cetera. We were the ones that did that. We had two people in Congress. So we were a pretty substantial body of people composed of some of the best doctors in the world that I've ever worked with, doctors like Ernest Krebs, people like that who discovered B15, John Christopher, the father of herbs in this hemisphere, those kinds of people. These are the people that I studied with. I was a young guy then, and they were the older guys, and I was their student, and I'm always a student. But one of the interesting things that happened with ELF was that in our audience, we had a lot of people in their 70s, 80s, and sometimes 90s, even in 100 sometimes. We have some, what I call, super seniors in our audience. And I would go from one city to another city, and I would have some little lady come up or some little man come up, and they'd say, "Dr. Bell, I have a question for you," because I was always wearing the pyramid since the early 70s, and they knew I was into energy. And they'd say, "Dr. Bell, I have a question for you." I'd say, "What's that?" And I'd say, "Well, there's this gray van that was sitting out in front of my apartment house. And there was something going on in that gray van. There was a little antenna on the top of it. And then pretty soon, the people in that gray van moved next door to me. And I started feeling sick and weird all the time." Well, I the first time you hear that, well, that's senility. You know, that's, you know, super seniority, a senior moment, paranoia. How you could define that? But what happened was, when I would go from city to city, hearing the same thing from elderly people that had never met themselves, that were not aware of what was said or spoken by the people in the previous cities, and after a few hundred of these people in the 70s, I realized there really was government experimentation with ELF on an individual level to see how they could, what frequencies would screw people up. Okay? So then, we had created by then the Star Orb, which, by the way, our products are more copied by more companies all over the world. I had to patent the receptor because I got tired of seeing all these pendants that people wore that don't do anything, copied from our original designs. We hung the Star Orbs up in all of these people's homes, and the vibrations started to go away. But what was happening was, there was at that time a mass data collection going on, which was later on fed into HAARP, okay? High frequency oral, which is now beamed all over the world. So this was the data gathering, you know, phase of what was going on. Now, previous to 1974, when I was working, I had my own electronics company. Right after I left NASA, my job was in instrumentation. I was a senior instrumentation engineer / scientist, researcher. That meant that if you had a laboratory in East Fishkill, New York, and you were an IBM plant, and you were working with a squid technology, which was a form of time travel tunnel diode device, you needed to measure the instruments. If you were Bell Telephone down at Murray Hill and you were working on satellite communications, you had to have instruments. If you were Hughes out in L.A. or TRW and you were working with satellite and lunar communication, you had to have instruments. If you were Ogden Technology and you were doing environmental tests to see what it's like to duplicate the atmosphere of the moon, you needed tests. If you were the Lockheed Skunk Works and you were testing airplanes, and you, what wind tunnel pressure does the wings break off? You had to have a transducer. It was an instrument. So here is the man that instrumented the entire United States for a period of about 10 or 15 years on every conceivable project that you can imagine. I was there putting instruments, okay? I was in the electronics industry, very, very popular. Everybody knew my name, okay? As a matter of fact, how many of you know Stephen Greer? Heard of him? Disclosure Project. Better check him out. Get that, the book, The Disclosure Project book from Stephen Greer, Dr. Stephen Greer, because you'll find a chapter, you'll find me in there with some current NASA rocket scientists, with current Air Force generals that are in place, working as you speak, and you'll also see the chapter on Dr. B., talking about a lot of this stuff. And in the research, working with all these companies, if I'm doing the instrumentation, even though I had a secret clearance at the time, obviously I knew I could go from one company because
there's the first 15 minutes of that. That was the finishing off of the tape from last week. So if you want to hear the first part of that, just go to the archives. Because side two, I think we played first. I'm not sure. Maybe not. Let me just look at this one. No. Do 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 boom boom. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we played that the first part of that last week. So now we're running on into another show here, which will be kind of fun to listen to here.
Dr. Fred Bell, Southern California. You are tuned to your top alternative, 93.5 KFOX. It is now time for Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. Now live from Laguna Beach, California, here is Dr. Fred Bell. Dr. Bell, good morning.
Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Now, what is all this I hear about a crash?
Well, I crashed my flying saucer on the freeway this morning on the way back from Venus last night. I had a late date.
Well, that's what happens when you go out of town with those things.
Well, I had some of that Venusian milkshake, and it absolutely got me real crazy on the control stick.
I don't even know how to respond to that.
Well, I know that, but according to Kimberly, I'm looking out, beautiful Laguna Beach is all cloudy,
Yeah.
She made it cloudy here. She talked about her chariot all morning here.
Well, she had a very upsetting experience that I can identify with.
Well, I've had a few of those, It's really rough when I get on my motorcycle and have the same experience,
Yes. Did you get a chance to hear Frederick, by the way, this morning?
No, I didn't get a chance to hear him earlier enough. Could you reiterate?
Well, I can't because I'm not Frederick. All I can tell you is that Frederick is one of the most articulate, overwhelming personalities I have ever met. He is very well versed in the Vedas.
Uh-huh.
He is steeped in Hindu philosophy.
Right.
And he claims to be from Arcturus. And that is about all I'm going to comment on in Frederick. We're going to have him back, and he stimulated a lot of calls and was very, very fascinating.
Sounds like you guys had a lot of fun this morning.
Oh, I had a lot of fun. I was just sorry to hear about Kimberly. That was terrible, and I'm sure she'll rebound from that, though.
Yeah, well, if I'd have had my act together, I would have got back from Venus so late last night.
Were you taking some psychedelics or something?
No, I would like to, though. No, actually, the best I could do is a glass of wine late at night. I gave up psychedelics a while back because the problem was, I found that I don't come down from those things, I take them and I just go out, forever. As a matter of fact, I have to eat a lot of meat these days to even stay down because I get the same effect from eating, vegetables and raw foods that most people do from psychedelics.
Now that is fascinating.
Yeah, it's true, Well, yesterday we were talking about the system, we started getting into how to align it and what it does. But
yes.
Having been in one for 14 years, I'll tell you, Jim, back in the early, early, early 70s and late 60s, yes, I did take a few psychedelics, like every day, for about a year after I sold my electronics company because I was like running away from everything. Today, my attitude is accept everything, but in those days, I didn't know any better.
Yes. Well, you're one these days that preaches purity of body and mind.
Yeah. But, what was interesting is what I strived back in those days when I would come down from psilocybin was my big thing in those days, but when I would come down from the experience, I would ground out for a couple of days. I was a strict vegetarian then, and I'd go back up again. I just couldn't be on this plane. I couldn't be bothered with the mundane things that happened on the Earth-type plane. Today, after the time machine, right, which we talked about in previous shows, after the time machine, which showed me that everything is happening now, right now, like the most dearly thing that I could be doing right now is talking to you, For you and I to exchange energy is the best thing that could ever happen at this point in time, because this is what we're supposed to be doing, and our interchange is shared by lots and lots and lots of listeners. That, to make that statement 10 years ago, I couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, all right, Jim, you believe what you believe in, I believe what I believe in, I'll see you later, But today, it's like, I've learned about seasoning, about spice, because, the future is right now. we can take off any time we want. Now, you know, the more grounded out that you become through whatever means that you use to become grounded out, you know, when you do lift off, because you're grounded out, you lift off entire segments of society with you, which is natural. You know what I mean? And it's our job, it's your job, and it's my job to have these kinds of communiques that we have on the phone here and on the air with all of our listeners, because we are raising consciousness at the moment that we share new ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage every listener out there to share new ideas, whether they be good or whether they be bad, whether you're insecure about them or whether you're confident about them, share them with your friends, because sharing is just so important, you know. Sound like Kimberly Hart now, don't I?
Well, I was thinking, what I agree with what you say. I think that we should constantly hypothesize new ideas, and then we should try and validate them with evidence from the real world.
Yeah, no, I totally realize that and totally agree with you 100%, you know. But anyway, you know, back in the 60s when I was doing all this crazy stuff in the early 70s, to get high, at some point in time I realized the idea is not to get high, it's to be high, you know, all the time. So today, I have to go out and find myself at least twice a week eating some meat, you know, which I wouldn't have done back in the early 70s, late 60s when I was a strict vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was absolutely revolting to think about, you know, killing an animal to sustain my own life, you know. Realize that when you harvest the plant, you're doing the same thing on a more, you know, lesser level. But the fact is, what you have to do is give thanks, you know. You have to revere what is being put into your stomach. You know, that's like saying a prayer over each meal, which I've learned to do.
But, you know, I let me just stop you there for 1 second, because I think you made a very important point when you were talking about the essence of life in both the animal kingdom and the plant kingdom. If you are a vegetarian, and again, I'm throwing this out as an opinion, it would seem to me that what you are doing is giving the animal kingdom preference over the, or you're showing more reverence towards the animal kingdom, because you won't kill them, but you're perfectly willing to eat the vegetable kingdom, the plant kingdom.
That's totally true. And what it boils down to is good old karma, you know.
Uh-huh.
When you eat a vegetable, you take on a certain karma that in a period of time makes you very yinned out. When you get into the animal, it's, you know, called the yang energy. The fact is, you need to balance the two. Someday, we'll reach a point where we become breatharians, and we'll only breathe the oxygen, you know, of the earth and the nitrogen of the earth, and transmute the energy. Meanwhile, the animal is giving a willing sacrifice to him, and, you know, you can go out and make headlines all over the world, or I could go out and make headlines all over the world about how inhumane it is to kill an animal for us to live. But the fact is, if either one of us did that, it would have no effect on society for more than a few milliseconds.
Right. As a matter of fact, right now, it's interesting you bring that up, because there's a lot of controversy over the little baby that had the baboon's heart implanted.
Yeah, that's real interesting, you know, that kind of heart transplant.
But some people don't believe that it was right to kill the young baboon so that the young baby could live.
Well, you know, it's like about 3 or 4 days ago, you guys had reached a really intimate conversation when you were talking about ultrasound and observing an abortion and how the young fetus was reacting to the tongs of the doctor that was going in there, and how after he had seen that on the ultrasound, he never did an abortion again. And at that point in time, I remember that you and the doctor you were talking to had made the comment, at what point does a soul enter onto the scene? You know, that was one of the questions that I asked one of my Tibetan teachers a long time ago.
And the answer?
Well, the answer was very simple. The soul overshadows the mother and the father long before the child is, you know, inseminated or is beginning. The soul, it's like remember we talked about the bee and the beehive and the angel?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, the soul overshadows, you know, the mother and the father I don't really know where it begins, but it's somewhere at the point in the relationship when they're like heavy dating or any kind of seriousness or commitments are made. That much I learned from the Tibetans, that the overshadowing begins there. And as the mother, once the mother gets pregnant, the soul, the sphere of influence, which is called a ring pass knot by the Tibetans, as the fetus becomes more and more, you know, alive and more larger and large in the woman's stomach, it's the soul level on the physical plane becomes less and less and less, the sphere of influence. For example, when a, the opposite of that one would be a person that died, say, on the operating table. My grandfather was the first case in New York to do that. And then 6 hours later, he woke up in the Buffalo morgue, you know. He was pronounced dead, but he wakes up in the morgue in a refrigerated section, wide awake, you know, and alive. He had had this experience of all around his periphery and an experience of his wife that had died of cancer 10 years before that, my grandmother. Well, imagine the reverse of that. And it's common sense if you think about it. The soul that overshadows the mother and the father becomes less and less, the sphere of influence, which is called the ring pass knot, becomes less and less and less as the fetus reaches maturation toward expression on the physical plane. So the soul, which is presiding over the mother and father, loses its power and slowly surrenders to the birth state, the state of birth. Because at that point, it's the same thing as my grandfather went through, or lots of people went through, where they wake up and they're on the physical plane. And it's common sense. If you think about it, it's not that complicated. Example, why does a soul surrender, you know, itself and surround itself to a mother and father? Look at the castles in Europe, okay? Most of the German castles, especially up in the Carpathian Mountains in Hungary and in Yugoslavia, the castles that are there are very, very, very large structures, not built in one lifetime, built in many, many, many lifetimes, because the master soul would continually reincarnate again and again and again into the family structure. And this is what the desire was of that family, because the most powerful unit of energy, and we've said it many times on the show, energy cannot be created, energy cannot be destroyed, but the most powerful unit of energy, and think about it, is the family unit. What is more awesome than the power of a family? What, you know, if God is for real and we have our freedom, what can extend beyond the family unit? We have our brothers and our sisters and our mothers and fathers, and this feeling goes on and on and on again, and it grows. So applying that knowledge, which is what the Tibetans teach us about, which is what I was talking about yesterday in the synthesis, you know, synthesizing of the Eastern and the Western philosophies, it's not so hard to see how that works. You know, it works in Europe. Europe is a very strong culture. When scientists, for example, want to look at negative ionization, we look at cultures. We look at the effects, for example, of the full moon and the new moon on civilization. We looked at the Shirav, the Hansen, you know, all the different names that have been given to the witches' winds over centuries. And we look at the reactions of people. Like, for example, in Turkey, there are laws that are 1,000 years old saying that if crimes are committed, you know, during the full moon or during the Shirav over there, there's a certain leniency given on the court to the person, the offender, you know, because of this condition which produces high serotonin levels. So we look at cultures that have shown us a lot. In America, you know, America is a very dear country to me, being an American. But unfortunately, what we lack in this country is culture. We really lack reflection on our ancestry, and we should respect that, because if our ancestors didn't exist, we wouldn't exist. And so when you get into the philosophies of abortion, and that, what you're doing when you take that place, first of all, when you do an abortion, you are removing that oversoul, that overshadowing energy, back to the cosmos. You're not getting rid of it. It will sit there and wait for another opportunity, and it will come again and again until it is finally allowed to express itself. But you're also saying that you know, you're not accepting responsibility of the parenthood that brought you into this world. Like, you know, like Jim, I'm sure somebody changed your diapers, right, when you were a kid?
No, I was very prolific as a... Of course.
Yeah, right, me too.
I don't remember it, though.
Yeah, well, you should. I mean, you were a mess. I remember it. But anyway, all kidding aside, you know, karma, the art of sacrifice, right? You know, it's like I have a daughter that's 5, and I didn't have any problem changing her diapers when she made a mess out of them. I had no problem because I was doing for her what my parents did for me. You know, if anything, I was getting rid of this karmic obligation that I had, because when somebody serves you, you learn in the art of service to relinquish that energy. Now, of course, being a scientist, I had shortcuts. You know, I never changed diapers, you know, like the average person does. If she did the big number 2 in the diapers, I put her in the sink and turned the water on at a nice level where it was comfortable and flush it all down the garbage disposal. I mean, there's scientific methods that you can use here. The fact is, I honored that responsibility.
It sounds very assembly-like.
Yeah, it was that way. But anyway, what we were talking about yesterday was setting up the systems in the house. Remember that? And I think I should get back to the subject here before I get rid of the whole program.
That's okay. I enjoy just listening to you.
Do you?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, listen to you a little bit, you know. I enjoyed the chariot conversations earlier today, and I just had to get into that feeling, you know, because obviously Kimberly wanted us to, you know. She created a whole thing for the rest of the day, which is okay. I accept that, because maybe I'll do that tomorrow. You know?
No, you can choose to react to that situation any way you want to.
Yeah, I know. You know, as we talk, it gets darker and darker down here. Maybe we're going to have an earthquake in a few minutes.
Is there a large dark cloud moving over a Laguna now? Or
yeah. As a matter of fact,
it's the mothership.
Starting
right?
About 10:30, you know, it actually got crazy. I was expecting the rain any minute down here, you know.
I want to stop for just a second and remind everyone they are listening to Dr. Fred Bell's Health, Science, and Energy Show. On this Tuesday morning, we do this Monday through Friday between 11 o'clock and 11:30 on your talk alternative. Dr. Bell, now, are you sure there is not a mothership in that cloud?
Well, I'll tell you, in another month or so, I wouldn't argue with that, you know. And it won't be too long before we see a few of those around here. Like, I think the one that our beloved friend the other day saw, you know, the one back east.
Which one are we talking
about? Alan Hynek.
Oh, Dr. Hynek's report of the flap back in upstate New York in Connecticut.
Yeah.
Yes,
you know, it was funny. That's where he had, you know, he was like a, I remember when he was contracted by the Air Force, because I was in the Air Force. And it was amazing because he was the number one skeptic. I mean, that guy could explain away a sighting in a swamp gas. And me, being from Ann Arbor, Michigan, had seen lots of swamp gas. And I'd also seen lots of big, huge, you know, radio telescope set in the swamp, which would be a feature attraction for a UFO.
Well, you know, Dr. Hynek never really said that UFOs were swamp gas.
No, he did in the very beginning. In the very beginning, he did. And then he had an experience at Marymount College back east in Connecticut, where he went in to investigate a UFO sighting. And, you know, while he was investigating it, they had one. He was a witness.
Well,
that turned him around.
What I've got to say, in fairness to Dr. Hynek, what he has said to me when I've asked him about that,
mm-hmm.
he claims that there was a press conference being held, and, of course, he had to explain these massive sightings there in Michigan.
Right.
And so he was up against the wall, and he said it is possible that some of these sightings might just be swamp gas.
I mean, right.
He really hedged his bet there. And then, of course, the press zipped out of the room and said, Hynek says UFO is swamp gas.
Right. Well, he's over that one now.
Well, he's got a good sense of humor about that, too, by the way.
I know it. But I remember when it happened. Because I was, you know, I was on Project Blue Book on the back end of it.
Mm-hmm.
He was coming on the front end of whatever they called his project, you know. So I was like, phasing out, and he was phasing in. It was a real interesting thing. But the stuff that we've been talking about with the systems, where I started to explain the alignment yesterday, you know, remember how we drew the circle and did all that?
Yes.
That information came to me through extraterrestrial sources, and because I could have never thought this up. I'm not that creative. But having you know, created this type of equipment and having spread it all over the face of this planet, because it's literally in every country right now, and then having seen the results of it, it's just totally awesome. And I just wanted to share that with you, you know. But we were talking yesterday about the Systems 3 and setting it up. You know, remember how I described making a 10-foot circle?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And in the 10-foot circle, we had drawn a north and south line with a compass, and we marked the point where the line intersects the circle at the north with T1. And then on that same line between north and south, we had drawn a 52-degree angle, called that T2, and we had drawn one off of that and called it T3. And what we had discussed yesterday was the fact pyramid, if you took the angle of the side of the pyramid and divided by 7, you would have, you know, the actual 7 divisions in a circle. So you'd have 7, you know, concentric or even divisions in the circle. And what happens is, when I explained yesterday about how we put up the irradiators, those tall columns, and the unit that went in the bottom, and they were filled with crystals. And what happens is, when you set or put a structure like that up in your living room or wherever, it immediately becomes attuned to the rotation of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's aligned, see, all you have to do to get into this cosmic energy, or whatever you want to call it, you know, if you can call it terrestrial energy, all you have to do is set up a structure that is resonant to the frequencies of gravity and set the structure up in alignment with the motion of the earth and the moon and the sun and all the other things that happen. So that's precisely what we do when we set one of our systems up.
Dr. Bell, excuse me for interrupting, but I have been handed a note that I think I should announce, and that is that your seminar will be November 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Unity by the Sea Church, I guess that is, at 1245 4th Street in Santa Monica. Now, did you even know that?
Yeah, I had it here, as a matter of fact. I'm glad you remind me, and little Debbie's on her way in. She's probably listening to us right now. She's not there already.
She is already here. I see her smiling visage through the glass. So that is the seminar, November 15th, 7:30 p.m. at Unity by the Sea, 1245 4th Street in Santa Monica. And do people make reservations for that?
Well, I'm not sure. You know, when Debbie Kennett comes on the air, she's going to explain it all, and I'm going to listen.
Okay. you just show up and do your thing, right?
Yeah, I'm the peripheral scientist out here in the fringes waiting for Miss Goddess to tell me when and where I'm supposed to appear.
Okay.
I guarantee I'll be there, but it says a corner
on
of
time, right?
Six.
You'll be there on time, too, right?
Yeah, I guarantee I won't be late like the last
one. The last one, I was sweating it out.
But I got there.
Yes, you did, and you had quite
not only that, when I got there, we kept it going, and you guys all fell asleep in the back, and then we just kept on going, you know?
Now, wait a minute. We had a good time there. You know, we've got a phone call for you. Let's go to the phone lines right now.
Okay.
On line 6, we've got Greg. Greg, good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing, Greg?
Good. I'm doing good, Fred.
Oh, good.
I know you get a lot of compliments about your systems and things, and I just wanted to tell you that, you know, I've been wearing this one pyramid on my head now for a couple months.
2 months? Which one?
You know, I don't even know.
Well, is it real lightweight or is it heavy?
It's light.
Oh, it's a titanium one, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, I bought one from you at the last seminar, and
okay.
I loaned it to a friend of mine who's an acupuncturist,
right.
And he charges pendulum with it,
right.
So he wouldn't give it back to me, so I'm borrowing one from Olivia. Do you remember her?
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that I've gone through more growth, you know, with this thing. I feel so much more connected to the higher energies, and so much more.
You know, like I was saying at the very first part of our show, I used to have to take drugs, you know, like psilocybin and LSD back in the late 60s, early 70s to get high. And then suddenly I discovered somewhere along the way when Ralph Metzner came back from India and Timothy O'Leary got really, you know, balanced out, that you don't have to get high, you just be high. And one of the things about wearing the pyramid is it naturally brings your body up to a higher level of vibration. It's like the system we've been talking about.
Right.
Yeah, the system is like 10,000 times what wearing that pyramid is. But I wore, you know, one of the few people told me, one of the perpetuators of this knowledge was the guy up north that does the spirulina, you know, Christopher Hill. And he has some comment, you know, he's a great spirulina man and a great pendulum man. He doesn't know anything about pyramids because he came out with this stuff about negative green, right, which was nothing more than a positive ion created by a plastic or aluminum-framed pyramid. So to disprove what people were saying about pyramids, I wore every single day of my life for 8 years a pyramid on my head. I was never seen in the home, out of the home, or in public without my pyramid. I did it for 8 years to prove the point. I have a 5-year-old daughter that was born in one. The bottom line of pyramid is it raises consciousness very quickly.
Last week, I've been doubling up on my vitamins lately, and I've been wearing this thing. Last week, I left here Friday with so much energy, I felt like I was going into outer space.
Yeah, you got to be careful, because what will happen is you'll get so high and so confident within within your own nature that you won't relate to people properly. So don't get too far out there.
Okay.
Do, believe me, I know, I've been.
So how do you control all this energy when you're amplifying it 10 times, like,
well,
with these systems in the house?
If your lifestyle will allow it to perpetuate, you will automatically attract to you people of the same energy field. If your lifestyle will not allow that, you'll become isolated. So isolation will bring you back by itself. It speaks, you know, to nature and a voice within itself. But, you know, you might meet some really neat people.
Yeah, well, you know, I used to design antennas for aircraft.
Did you?
Yeah. And what was really fascinating for me was that when I read about your pyramids, that they're actually antennas.
Oh, yeah. NASA came out with a what's called a tech brief back about 1969 showing how that you could take a pyramid structure in a grid system connected to a diode and a capacitor and get electricity from it.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I used to sit there
with... work with pyramids. They're using pyramids now. They used it for ESP experiments on the first moonwalk, too, but this is kind of stuff the public never really got into. You know, they didn't really talk about
right.
it.
Right. So, I guess the frequency generator, then, you said, is the vibration of gravity?
Well, no, what it allows you, the pyramids are all the way across the spectrum of color. And
right.
the pyramid feeds the hydrogen atom within the body. So what it does is allow you, your conscious mind, to become aware of, you know, similar harmonious vibrations, and one of them could be, you know, gravity. So what it does is it raises awareness so that you can become more scientific or whatever.
Can you physically, like, measure gain patterns off these things?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
No problem at all. It's done with biofeedback equipment. One of the best pieces of equipment that I've ever done was an EMG, electromyograph, which measures the amount of electricity coming from the brain to a particular muscle in the body. And when you put a pyramid on, the EMG readings go up substantially. This is this is considered orthodox medical equipment.
And Greg and Dr. Bell, we're going to have to move along. Greg, by the way, I got your letter the other day.
Great.
Thank you very much. It was very complimentary.
Welcome. I'd like to compliment all of you. Because you do such a good job, and I've really changed my life, really seriously, since this show. I've gone through so many great changes. That's why I just wanted to call Dr. Bell and tell him that I just feel so much more connected. I think I've gone through more growth in the last 2 years, and I've been trying to shake a lot of negativity for the past 5 years. And with this thing on my head, I just really suddenly just feel not connected to all that negative stuff at all.
Right. That's exactly the way it works.
And your seminar is right up near my house, so I'll be seeing you up there later next month.
Okay.
Great.
Greg, thank you very much. And Dr. Bell, we're just about out of time.
Well, we had fun today, didn't we?
Oh, we did. We hit a number of topics, and we had a lot of fun doing it.
This is what you call a kickback day.
Now, let's give your address so that people can get a hold of you.
Okay, it's 891 Santa Ana Street in Laguna Beach, and the zip is 92651. And the phone number down there is area code 714-499-2603.
So that is the phone number and the address if you're interested in finding out about Excalibur, the synergistic vitamin, if you're interested in finding out about pyramids, nuclear receptors, any of your products, right?
any of them, all the way up to time travel, you know.
And when is Death of Ignorance going to be back?
Well, we got our Xerox, our 1048, in a week ago. It doesn't work. It's a new machine. It prints both sides, 50, you know, copies per minute. So as soon as Xerox finishes up my machine, we're ready to go on it. So I would say realistically about 45 more days now.
Okay, we'll look forward to that. And Dr. Bell, we'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Bye-bye. Oh, can you hold on a second? As a matter of fact, somebody wants to talk to you, I think.
Yeah, we're going to go over the bounds here, huh?
Yeah, you hold on, but you hold on. I think somebody's going to grab the line, okay?
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was the end of that little bit of a show, and that was always fun. And that was a big show back in the early 80s. My daughter, Alana, was only 5 then, and she's, almost 30 now. And we'll just pop in another 15 minutes of fun here, finish off the day, and called Building a Powerful Immune System.
Building a Powerful Immune System and Raising Consciousness by Dr. Fred Bell. Dr. Bell is a holistic medical doctor who began his career as a scientist at the early age of 9, working with his father at the University of Michigan, researching atomic energy. An author, musician, former physicist, and NASA engineer, and part of the Saturn and Apollo lunar missions, Dr. Fred Bell is today an internationally known contractee and speaker on preventive medicine and Pleiadian science. His book, The Promise, co-authored by Brad Steiger, is now released in Europe, Japan, and the U.S. Death of Ignorance and his 18-hour educational tape series are also fundamental works. Soon to be released will be his new book, The Secret Promise. Our speaker, Dr. Fred Bell.
Thank you. Oh, it's fun to be up here again. I haven't been up here in a whole month. You guys got any more conferences for December and November? Yeah, it was fun listening to Stephen Greer in there talk about his work that he's doing, and you know, it's in our hands. But it's kind of cute because the new book I'm writing called The Secret Promise has all that science that came from the extraterrestrials. So I've been a contactee since I was a kid, and of many races, mostly the Pleiadians and Andromedans in later years. And I'm just finishing a book that explains pretty much all about parallel universes and how we interface with them. It talks about how we create earthquakes and how we can stop them, how we can control our environment and our destiny. It pretty much put all of Nostradamus' serious quatrains to rest. But people are still running a little bit of scared because the fear factor of ignorance still runs rampant in society. But that'll all go away pretty soon. One of the most exciting chapters that I just finished was on time travel. Time travel is really a great thing, and it's quite possible now. I was able to build a time machine back in the mid-80s. As a matter of fact, it was constructed and operated during the last El Niño. And now that we're having another one down in California in this part of the world, I would be writing a chapter in my book, which is basically a book in itself, about a phenomenon that really works well. Time travel is quite possible, and it's much easier to attain during these type of weather conditions. Because what happens is the bands or the bonds between the astral plane and the physical plane, and there's 8 side continuums between our world and a parallel universe. And they come together. There's a thing called the whirling dervish. And it's an energy field that manifests itself at a certain point in time. And in our relationship with the Pleiades, we rotate around the Pleiades every 25,827.5 years. This is called the precession of the equinox. And in that rotational period, we have 2,250-year cycles, which we call ages. We're coming out of what's called the Piscean Age, and we're moving into the Aquarian Age. When you go from one age to another, the vibratory frequency of the forces that link up our nuclear assembly and our bodies change frequency. We are made up of oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Oxygen, hydrogen, nitrogen, and carbon. Carbon atom is the pyramid. It's a pyramid shape. It's an octahedron. And its job in the body and in form is to consciously direct the metabolism and construction of all different atomic structures. The hydrogen atom in our body, which is the hydrogen atom in science, is where the consciousness comes into our forms. So when we understand quantum mechanics, which I wouldn't expect a lot of you here to understand, but it's pretty simple to understand when you study it a little bit, you begin to realize that not only can you release the nuclear forces inside of us and make a bomb, but you can also release the nuclear forces inside of us and cause tremendous healing to happen to yourself and others, tremendous balance to come overnight to a planet, because we are all holographically connected together. The oxygen atom in our constitution, what it does is it allows the form that we have consciousness in to breathe in the environment that's in it. So that's why the Eastern people have always said this is the atom of prana. So we have nitrogen and oxygen and hydrogen and carbon. Nitrogen's job, if you study chemistry, is to build the form. It builds the protein molecule in the body. And so when you start working with these four structures, you start to realize what you are and what you can do with yourself. You start realizing that, for example, our bodies from DNA are minerals. Our bodies are 5% mineral, yet 5% of the mineral in our bodies controls 95% of metabolic functions. And it's really sad in our society because now we're coming to a time where we need to really unlock the forces and character of DNA and bring those up into consciousness to be enriched by what's here for us in this present time. If you look back at the past, and you look back at where we were 300 years ago or 400 years ago, you see the progression of science was a lot more retarded than it is today. The obvious reason for that is the atomic structure of the people couldn't host the intelligence that's necessary to bring us up to where we are in those periods of times. We also have a phenomenon, that is energy follows thought. And when energy follows thought, thought manifests action. We have seven planes of consciousness that we work within. We're on the lowest plane of consciousness, which is known as the physical plane. If you back up one state of consciousness, you go to what's called the astral plane. We all go to the astral plane at night when we sleep. We don't think of the power that we have there. Or if we go into an accident and are killed, we move out of our bodies and we go into the astral plane, and we live in the astral plane until we reincarnate again back on the physical plane. So we have all of these factors to deal with. Beyond the astral plane, we have the mental plane, which is spontaneous on one level and logical on another. Beyond that, we have the plane of intellect, each one a higher level of consciousness, each one a simpler form of energy, more intense and more directed than the previous one. Now, I'm sure most of you have heard of the prophecies of the pyramids, the end of the millennium, and all of these kinds of things, that these quatrains that not only Nostradamus, but a whole host of other people espoused forward into our society. And you hear more and more about it on all, even TLC channels, all the cable channels are starting to cover all this stuff. Well, what they're talking about is a merging point. People are afraid of this merging point, but there comes a point when the human DNA is so high in frequency that it merges perfectly with spirit, and we become superhuman. Those of us that are able to take this test, that be able to stand this purification. And we're in the purifying point now. So we're coming from the Piscean Age. The Piscean Age, the integrity of the soul was that I believe. So as a result of this integrity, with this consciousness, the construction of the way our world went for the last 1,000 or 2,000 years was the building of a lot of churches to support religion, through tremendous political structures, war structures were built, and governments were put in place, all to support belief systems. And then, of course, we had the holy wars and the fight between the belief systems. But now we come into another space, and a different type of soul is not coming in with a consciousness of I believe, but a consciousness of I know. We have knowers here. We don't need the Holy Bible to find God, and we don't need an environmental impact report to realize the earth is pretty screwed up right now. We know these things. So this brings us to a higher frequency. When we have a higher frequency of soul starts to incarnate with more and more and more of the answers. So we have to turn to those souls for guidance. This is very important. And if we don't turn to those souls for guidance, then we're not going to go anywhere. And this is the progression of life. It's a normal thing. So as we move around the Pleiades, it's this 25,827.5 years, and we go through these different ages or cycles, and the vibratory field changes, other things start to happen too. And one of the other things that starts to happen is we have what's called a compression of consciousness. Compression of consciousness means that the astral plane starts to fuse into the physical plane. You start to see changes in physics and science when this begins to happen, this phenomenon begins to happen, because here we limit things to the speed of light. The speed of light is everything to us in science and physics. In order to go beyond the speed of light, we have to move out of this dimension. We have to go into the fourth dimension of time. We go into the fourth dimension of time, we approach a doorway. And this doorway can take us anywhere we want to go. A simple anomaly of this would be a dying star. If you take a dying star that would have been a million miles across, and it starts to shrink down into something that's 3 feet across, its gravity increases tremendously. When its gravity increases tremendously, it produces around it what's called an event horizon. Anything that comes within the realm or the domain of that event horizon will be directed immediately down to this basketball-sized star that was once a million miles across because of the extreme gravity. When this is drawn in, space is no longer flat. Space now becomes positively or negatively curved. This is what made Einstein so famous when he discovered the theory of relativity. And he said that in the theory of relativity, which was proven during a eclipse of Jupiter at one point, that if this black hole in fact does exist and light goes near it, light will be directed off its path or disappear altogether. And this was proven. This made Einstein very famous back in the 30s. And, of course, the rest is history. Then we also have the theory of relativity, which he never finished, which is now being finished by life itself. And so when you have a star that starts to decompress and get smaller and cool down, it starts to warp space, creating this huge event horizon across it. Energy starts to go down into that star. And it goes down into that star, it goes into what's called a singular form. All energy, whether it be light, whether it be cosmic, goes into a singular form. And when it goes into a singular form, it becomes what's called a space-time singularity. In a space-time singularity, it goes into zero time as it disappears off the event horizon. And going into zero time, it goes into what's called a wormhole. In the wormhole, the energy is distributed back across the seven levels of consciousness and directed back into the hydrogen atom of every human being here. And someday, when science understands the feedback between the dying star and the birth of a child and sees the relationship, it'll be just as we understand. We are the universe. And this is the point of science, the point of realization that we're going into now. And this is the Pleiadian teachings that are now available for this world to understand. So I've been fascinated by the work that I've been exposed to. I started out at the University of Michigan when I was real young. I was about 9 years old in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We worked on it wasn't called the Philadelphia experiment, but it was the equivalent of it. It was the tail end of it, actually. And we learned about warping things and creating magnetic fields and diamagnetic fields. And we learned about what's called electrogravity. In my chapter in my new book, The Secret Promise, where I talk about propulsion systems, because that comes up in a lot of people's, a lot of questions. People say, well, how does this work and how does that work? How does this, AVRO, reverse engineered alien vehicle, Area 51, work versus a Pleiadian or Andromedan or a Reticulan ship? What's the difference between gravity and electrogravity, anti-gravity? These are a lot of questions that come up. So I got into these things were pushed upon me when I was just a kid. And so as a result of that, I started out early. When I was like 8 years old, this would be back in the early 50s, we were hooking oscilloscopes up to our heads, putting probes on our brains and scanning our brain waves and then re-injecting brainwave frequencies to change our brain frequencies to see where our minds would go.
Running out of time, but experiment was with my friend Steven Eberbaugh, and believe it or not, after all these years of doing all that stuff, he went on to MIT. We reconnected, and now we're working on the X-15. So what I was just talking about is happening again on another level. Hope you enjoyed the show. This will be continued next week. It's going to be a very interesting listen, and have a very safe Memorial Day weekend.